Hi, I'm Sash Gansel, the director of the new Pixar show at the Blue Umbrella. You are listening to the Pixar podcast.
To infinity and beyond!
So, how long is this going to take?
You can't rush art.
What's the point of going out there? They'll only laugh.
Because you're a clown!
Stranger, from the outside.
Greetings.
You're not the queen. You don't smell like the queen.
I never look back, darling. It distracts from the now.
How do you feel?
Squirrel. I feel swell. In fact, I think I feel a song coming on.
Hey, good evening. How are you? How are you? Nice to see you. I tell you, it's great to be here in your room. Where are you from?
Hello there, Pixar fans. Welcome to another episode of the Pixar Podcast. You're listening to episode 103, thepixarpodcast.com/103. Is where you find the show notes for this episode. I'm Derek Clements, and I'm very glad that you're listening today on this very special day. Today, Monsters University opens nationwide in the United States, and we bring you today a full review. In a few minutes, we'll be joined by our regular co-host, Greg Mariotti from PixarDoc.com, and we'll also have another guest, Jermaine Lucier from SlashFilm.com, coming back to the podcast. Before we get to the review, though, I want to introduce you to some people that I met when I saw Monsters University.
What are your guys' names?
Chrissy.
Chrissy.
Barney.
Jason.
Matt.
Cool. So how long have you been in this line for?
Since three...
Sorry,
2:45.
It was like three-ish. an hour, something like that.
Yeah.
I saw Monsters University at a special college screening, and so the place was filled with college students. The movie theater was filled with college students waiting in line. The line was actually quite long. I thought that by getting there several hours early, I would be fine. But I was actually not the first person in line, not by a long shot.
Well, I actually came yesterday to be like, okay, what's the deal with the tickets?
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, line doesn't officially start till 3:30, but you can like hang out or whatever.
Yeah.
And so we're hanging out over here.
At 3:30,
we went all these people. Like, we're hanging back there, like, just, like, run through, and I'm all like, okay, like we're not that far back, but
right.
It matters.
No, yeah,
but at
right.
the same time, you're like, oh, we were, thought there was nobody else here.
Kind yeah, of thing. It's
and
pretty...
It's better to see a good turnout than be the only ones here.
Absolutely,
be,
yeah.
Be the only people who are excited about it. So.
Yeah, no, it's really exciting to see, but it's just very surprising to me. Already.
For sure.
So I want to talk to you. You have a cool Randall stuffed animal.
Yeah.
So you are here with Randall.
Yes.
And what was your name?
Beatrice.
So why did you decide to bring Randall with you?
Well, because Randall's my favorite character from Monsters, Inc. No, yeah. And yeah, this is like the only merchandise of Randall I have.
Cool.
Except, I think, no, I have two more, but cool. If I carried a bunch of them, then it would be weird. So.
Yeah. So are you a big Pixar fan?
Oh, yeah.
Why?
Well, when Toy Story first came out, I was like 2 years old, and I saw it through the drive-thru for the first time. So I guess it's because I grew up with Pixar.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember when you saw Monsters, Inc. for the first time? It's been a few years since that came out.
Yeah, I do remember little bits of it, but yeah, I remember I saw it in theaters.
How did you hear about this event?
Well, I kept on following, like, Monsters University on Facebook and posting up some events, but I had no idea that there was, like, advanced screening or anything until my friend, who lives all the way in Maryland, like wrote back saying, oh, I went to the advanced screening at Baltimore, and I'm like, you go to advanced screening? And I just got excited, and I looked up to see if there were any for Utah, and, yeah, I found one in Salt Lake City. I wanted to go, so...
That's cool. Yeah, and it's like really far in advance. It's like 2 months away.
Yeah.
It comes out. So that's cool that it's so. It's, yeah. So what do you expect with Monsters University?
A lot of heartwarming stuff, like laughter, heartwarming, maybe a bit of tear jerking.
It's classic Pixar, right?
Yes.
Classic Pixar. Cool. Well, if you think of anything else you want to say in the podcast, let me know.
I don't know, maybe like Monsters University is going to be awesome and go to see it when it comes out.
Awesome, cool. Good talking to you.
So it was very fun to meet those people and feel that anticipation to see the film. And hopefully it has gotten your anticipation up to hear our review because you've already seen the film. I definitely recommend that you see the film before you listen to this review. But I really, really loved this film, Monsters University, and I'm very excited to play for you our review. With me is Greg Mariotti. Hello, Greg.
Hey, how's it going?
Going great. Great to have you here. And we also have a special guest back to the Pixar podcast from SlashFilm.com, Jermaine Lucier. Hello, Jermaine.
Hey, Derek. Hey, Greg. How are you guys doing?
Great.
Good, man. Thanks for coming on.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys. It's fun. Always fun to talk about Pixar, especially that one time a year when we get a new movie.
I know. It's a very exciting occasion to have you on, to have both of you on. And yeah, super excited. So listeners, today we are going to review Pixar's new film, Monsters University. We've all three seen it. And Jermaine's actually seen this a couple times, which is cool. And the movie comes out today for those downloading the episode just as soon as it is available. The film comes out today, and this will be a spoiler review, so see the movie before you listen to the review. Figure it's the Pixar podcast; you're not listening unless you're going to see it anyway. So what's the point doing a review that spoilers aren't allowed? But we will try to talk kind of in depth about the movie and our thoughts and what we think, and hopefully it'll be fun for you to listen to and analyze with us. After you've seen the movie as well. But we will say general thoughts first, in case there are a few of you who are huge Pixar fans and you're listening to the podcast, but you're on the fence on Monsters U. We'll talk general first, but then we'll quickly get into full spoiler conversation. But yeah, so anything you want to say before we launch into that? Just about, I don't know, any exciting things in your life that you feel will help us in our conversation today, Greg or Jermaine?
Not particularly Pixar or Monsters University related. I will say that you said if there's a Pixar fan, if they're on the fence, just get off that fence, man. This movie is so good, but that's just my feeling.
Yeah, no, I'm excited. So we'll talk about this. Greg, how about you? Any pre-thoughts?
Nope. Let's get into this.
All right. Well, Jermaine, I want to start with you. And why don't you just tell us your thoughts on you say get off the fence. So what are your thoughts on Monsters University?
Well, I mean, it's funny. I mean, obviously, huge Pixar fan with you guys, and it came down to the last two years. I liked Cars 2 and Brave, but I wasn't over the moon about them. It wasn't like when I walked out of Toy Story 3 or Ratatouille or The Incredibles where I was just over the moon dying to talk about the movie. But I am like that with Monsters University. I feel like, a lot of people have been bitching online about why they keep making these sequels or not making these original movies. And it's like, this movie is as original as any of the other ones. It just happens to use the same characters. And where, you know, Monsters, Inc. was really a Sully story. Monsters U is a Mike story, making it completely different point of view. And what I was really surprised about more than anything is just the where this movie goes. You never know where it's going to go. Like a couple times you think you know where it's going to go, and it changes on you. And morally, like the message of this movie is not something you're used to expecting from Disney films or Pixar films. And I found that really, really special and worthwhile. I don't know where it ranks on my, all-time Pixar, but it's up there with good ones. I really, really love the movie.
Cool. Well, that's great to hear. I'm excited to dive into some of those topics you bring up. Greg Mariotti, how about your general thoughts on the film?
Pretty much in line with what Jermaine says. I was cautiously optimistic going into this film based on stuff we'd seen based on the first 40 minutes that we saw at Pixar. Very excited, but still cautious just because of kind of echoing what Jermaine said, I guess I'd probably be more on the disappointed camp when it comes to Cars 2 and especially Brave. Cars 2, I kind of knew going in, this is really not made for me. But Brave, I just felt like it was going to be a lot better than it ultimately ended up being, especially Acts 2 and 3, I thought were quite a bit of a letdown, where Act 1 was phenomenal. I think Monsters U kind of flips that around. I think Act 1 is okay, but the movie gets better as it progresses, and Acts 2 and 3 are phenomenal, and like Jermaine said, lots of twists and turns, and definitely exceeded my expectations.
Cool. Well, listeners, my thoughts about this film have been available for a while. Greg, you and I have talked about this already right after I saw it. It's been a couple months now. And so right afterward, we did the podcast and I kind of shared my thoughts. So today I want to hear mostly from you guys and just more talking more in depth about it and stuff. But I have to say, over the months, because to refresh, after I saw it, I was telling you, Greg, this is like the best thing since Toy Story 3. This is one of Pixar's best. And I have to say, over the couple months, that opinion hasn't changed. If anything, it's gotten stronger. So it sounds like all three of us really enjoyed this film, and it's going to be fun to talk about why. But I think a lot of the same things I can echo from you guys too. I just feel like it was thoroughly enjoyable. I loved the twists and turns of the plots and this moral. Like maybe we can talk about that more in a few minutes rather than right off the bat. But I agree with you, Jermaine, that it's a really, really interesting place that this goes to. So I think those are our general thoughts, listeners. It sounds like we all really liked it. So there you go. Get off the fence if you're thinking about seeing it. Go watch Monsters University and then come back and listen to the rest of this. But guys, where should we start? What do you want to talk about first?
Well, I say if we're going to go into spoilers now, let's just start there at the end.
Cool.
I mean, because I really think that is where it's like where the greatness of this movie lies. I mean, like you said, the twists and turns sort of. Before we get into that, I mean, I have to say and admit this. I admitted it a little bit. The first scene of this movie made me cry. Like, first time, the young Mike Wazowski being such a sweet kid and just getting shunned by all his friends, and then just sharing this moment that we all sort of have in our lives where it's like, oh my God, this is what I want to do. This is what I want to be. And to start the movie like that was so great and just really just dragged me in.
And little Mike is adorable. Little Mike is adorable, by the way.
He absolutely is. But then to skip all the way ahead and sort of, frame this a little bit.
Sure.
He doesn't end up getting what he wants. He ends up being successful at what he is because of who he is, and he doesn't get to be the scarer, which is his dream. And in a movie, in a world now where we're led to tell people, believe in yourself and you can accomplish everything, like they would say in Back to the Future. That's not what happens here. Believe in yourself and you can accomplish something that's worthy of yourself, but you can't be anything, As hard as I try, I'm never going to be an NFL football player, But like it's something like that. And that's the message here. And it really moved me that they would go all in on that kind of message.
Right. And the thing is, it's not a letdown. It's really quite a good, you leave this movie feeling great about how things work out. And I think that is where the difference, between some storytellers saying, this isn't just somebody saying, let's twist the traditional, happy ending. Let's do it something different just for the sake of being different. Like, no, really, this is just how life is sometimes. You have these ambitions in life, you know what you want to do, and then life is not always, you can't predict it. You don't always know. But the thing that I love about it is that it's not disappointing. In the end, Mike, I think, is happy. He doesn't feel like he's always living under Sully's shadow. You really believe that he has just learned something more about himself, which is what is so, I think, triumphant about this accomplishment that this movie does.
Yeah, I agree. Greg, what do you think?
No, I'm with you guys on everything there. I love the opening scene of the movie. It's kind of funny that Pixar's kind of done two like flashbacks in a row with like little elementary school versions of their main characters. They did it in Brave as well. But that scene just really works for me. I got goosebumps watching it for the second time with Mike going to Monsters, Inc. Really, really well done. I do think the movie kind of lags that was kind of a highlight for me in Act 1, and the movie kind of lags until we get, I think, into Act 2. But that scene's great, and you're right. I mean, just the whole ending is a surprise, especially for a Disney film, especially when I kind of felt like there was three or four twists there toward the end all in a row that all caught me off guard. I think if you want to kind of rattle them off, you've got Sully kind of doctoring the test, that surprised me, and then them getting kicked out of school surprised me, and then just kind of how they resolved Mike's storyline, and then they just kind of do this almost like flash forward with stills at the very end before the credits, and all the way up to Monsters, Inc., which that surprised me too, because I'm thinking there's so much room here to do another film, that they sort of kind of zip through that their history at Monsters, Inc. really quickly. So that all those things really surprised me.
Yeah, Greg, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, no, you're absolutely right. But even to get more specific, because the movie, like a traditional movie, would have ended with Mike winning the scare games for them, and it would have been yay, triumphant, right, and roll credits.
And you think it does. Moment, yeah.
You think it does. You're weird about it. It never feels quite right, which is a great balance there.
Yeah.
But and then once Sully's revealed that he cheats and he gets kicked out, it's like, oh my god, like this just got a little darker than I'm used to.
Yeah.
But then I thought, you know, everybody, you can't, who would forget the finale of Monsters Incorporated with the doors, and it's like a roller coaster, and it's such a beautiful visual achievement. Yeah, I feel like the real finale here is when they go into the human world through the door. And right. and that moment I found way more satisfying and exciting than the simple, we're going to ride a door around. I mean, simple in quotes. I mean, it's a really great scene. But that was so surprising too, because you're like, oh my, because, you know, from all the Monsters movies, well, all two of them, you know that everybody there is scared of humans. So for them to go in the human world raises the stakes. Then it's adults. We raise the stake again. Now we close the door. We can't get out. That raises the stakes again. It just creates so much tension. And so, and then, like, for them to break Hardscrabble's, like, record sort of with this incredible scare that Mike is, oh my god, like, so good. I've been reading reviews where people say, movie doesn't have any emotion or heart. And I'm like, what? I don't know. Like, were we watching the same movie? Do you guys watch The Floor during this movie? Because I was like, there's no way that we saw the same thing. Yeah, I love the finale in this movie, for sure. Like, that stuff is just so good.
Yeah, oh, that final scare is so great, because it you know, just thematically, it incorporates everything. That's when Mike is really succeeding. I mean, that's Mike's big triumphant moment, when he becomes you know, who he is, or who he will become, and he'll put all his talents and skills to good use. Yeah, I love that scene. The other thing about that scene is that visually, don't you guys think it just, I mean, the movie is beautiful all the way through, and it has that, you know, classic Monsters, Inc. world cartoonishness, all the characters and the bright colors everywhere, and the interesting architecture everywhere. There's lots of stuff visually in the movie, but that the human world in particular suddenly just looks so different. I thought that was very interesting, how the human world looked really, really realistic, and I just thought that was a nice touch.
No, I agree. Yep. Production design, I think Ricky Nierva did the production design on this, and he did the production design on Up as well, and I think you can see his influence on the film and just the style and the way it looks. And, you know, I think at this point, Pixar movies all look phenomenal from top to bottom, but really agree with you in terms of just the brightness and the colors and the pop of the human world, and just all the characters and animation and all the monsters in the background just kind of blew me away.
Yeah. So, Greg, to respond to something real fast, respond to what Greg you had said about the middle part. Yeah, I want to delve more into that. I think one thing that might get us kicked off there is the plot, to me, reminded me, like, just in its structure, to Ratatouille. I feel like Ratatouille, which is one of my favorite, you know, it's up there with my top couple of favorite films. And I feel like the plot in Ratatouille also takes a while to get going. Like, you're introduced to Remy, you're introduced to the different characters, and then, I mean, ultimately, this movie is about Remy in the kitchen and his relationship with Linguini and all that. But it really takes a long time and a few different twists with the granny and everything until it gets to that point. And Monsters U reminded me a lot of that. In the beginning, like, I was, when you start, you kind of, like, I was kind of feeling like the end of the movie was going to be the final, you know, because they start that class and Mike is anxiously studying and diligently studying for the final, and it just sort of has that feeling that the final is going to be like the big thing that it's leading up to, but then the final is like done really fast, and then it's something else, and then it goes on. And I think that so it's just not as clean maybe or as simple as a story like line. But I don't think that's necessary per se. But I do wonder if that is part of what you're talking about, Greg.
Yeah, I do. The movie feels like three very distinct acts, but they all work really well together. But it is almost like three mini movies kind of stitched together beautifully. But they all feel very different. They all have their own highs and lows, and but they work great together.
Yeah, because I've kind of felt like if anything dragged for me, at least on first viewing. And second viewing, when you know what to expect, it all sort of works much better. But on first viewing, I remember thinking, man, these scare games, there's really going to be five of these things. And I felt like that was a little excessive. On second viewing, you realize that you only see the first two and then the next two are montaged. So it's not as right. It's not as difficult. But I felt that first act, I mean, it builds the world, you know. And Derek, you make a great point that it almost builds to its own climax with that final, you know. So you have this final to look forward to. You have that. And, you know, we sort of see Sully in his world. We see Mike in his world. And we see how they're both being judged for who they are, like for just for their looks, you know, and it's an interesting thematic thing because you understand why the other monsters are saying this about Mike and saying this about Sully. So I had a little disagree with there that this first act really dragged, but I will say it's definitely not as exciting as the second or third act, but it is the three distinct movies thing is a good point.
It's just really weird for me to see a Pixar film that it's been a while. I really feel like since Toy Story 3, where the third act was the strongest act in the film. And then even go back to some of my favorite Pixar films like Up and Wall-E, where definitely the first acts are knock it out of the park masterpieces. So to see a movie like Monsters U, where I feel like each act subsequently gets better than the previous act, where even my opinion, maybe Act 3 might be one of the strongest acts ever for a Pixar film.
It is, yeah. I don't know. I don't know if it's ever – I mean, it's weird because it's hard to – sometimes you guys probably easier, but I'll look back at Pixar movies and almost forget because they're all so good. Like, you know, you're like, oh, yeah, that's right. Ratatouille is really good. Or, oh, yeah, that's right. Finding Nemo is really good. Or, oh, yeah, that's right. Toy Story 2 is really good. It's hard for me to, like, rank them all because now we're at a point where we have – like a really good cross section. But I would say that finale in this one is one of the more interesting. And I would put it up against maybe the innovation of the Wall-E or the Up first act. So yeah, I agree with that, but it's hard for me to like really contextualize it.
Derek, you're the music guy. What did you think of Randy Newman's score and just the music in general?
Yeah, well, this is something I was really paying attention to because I am such a fan of the Monster score, the Monsters, Inc. score, and it's almost like the most, when I was growing up and the sort of stuff that I liked to listen to, I always kind of felt like I was an old man and like I liked listening to jazz and like big band. And I didn't ever like to tell anybody that because I didn't feel like it was cool. So I remember like just listening to like the Monsters, Inc. Soundtrack, like in the shower as I prepared for high school and stuff, just kind of like not really sure if that was allowed to think that was cool. And I think it's appropriate for the film Monsters, Inc. because it's about these, you know, these guys that work, you know, these like guys that are just working guys. And I wondered with college being such a different setting, if the music would, how that would work, you know, would you get the jazzy music? Would you get the stuff? But I love it. I love what they did with it. It has, Randy Newman has a few new, themes or you know, melodies or whatever that he came up with for it. And I like the way that those are incorporated with some of the old score from the first film. So yeah, I'm really excited. I think the soundtrack, well, I guess by the time we release this, the soundtrack is already out, but and I'll already have listened to it. But I'm really excited to listen to the soundtrack because, especially that one theme that's like in the montage when they're studying, like the bump, bump, bada, bum, bum, bum. And I think it's the end credits too. I like that a lot. I'm excited to listen to that more.
Go ahead, Jermaine.
All right, no problem. I was just going to say it is a good mix of like sort of upbeat poppy with like the jazz riffs. It is, On a second watch again, when you sort of can concentrate on a little bit more of the elements as opposed to being so locked in on the story, the score in this does ring. I really enjoyed it too.
What do you think, Greg?
Well, I would kind of echo what Jermaine said. I'm not the music aficionado I think that you are, Derek. So for me, the first viewing around, I'm so invested in the story and what's happening, I kind of didn't even notice the music a whole lot. But I think when I get to see it a second time, it'll start to kind of resonate a little bit more for me. The other thing I wanted to mention before I forget is that I loved the hand-drawn, I think it's hand-drawn, animation of the opening credits. I thought that was really, really well done as well. Reminded me a lot of definitely of the Monsters, Inc. credits, but also of something like Your Friend the Rat, the extra on Ratatouille.
Yeah, or even the end credits of Ratatouille 2. And, you know, that's an example, Greg, I think, where this movie finds such organic and interesting ways to fit within the world of the first film. A little touch like that to have, you know, 2D animation in the opening. It just makes you feel like you're watching a movie that's part of that world. And I think the reason why that's important to me is, and I think I've mentioned this before, I mentioned this in my written review of Monsters U, that, you know, I don't feel like Cars 2 did that really well. That's really my main problem with Cars 2. I think that Cars 2 has a lot of good things about it. I'm not one of those that just really was disappointed hugely by it. But my biggest problem is that I'm never going to be in the mood to watch those two movies back to back, because to me, Cars is this like small town, like, happy story, and then Cars 2 is like a spy movie, and they both have interesting things, but they're not from the same world. And I feel like Monsters U, in a number of ways, really combines those. But yeah, the opening credits was just one of those. And I want to mention this too, real fast, that opening credits from Monsters Inc. almost didn't happen. It was sort of added in. I think it was on the DVD commentary that I learned that originally the movie just Monsters Inc. the first one just started with the scare demo, and it just didn't set the right tone for the movie, because the movie's a comedy and nobody was really laughing because it started off with a sort of scary feeling. And so they added those opening credits in to kind of just let the audience know this is going to be fun, it's going to be funny. And so it's kind of cool that like a throwaway moment like that would become important enough that they did it again in this movie too, and I think it works really well.
Yeah, I was going to say the opening credits echo what you guys say, both very enjoyable and beautiful. But it also is essential to the story because, you know, we see Mike say he wants to be a scare, you know, he goes into the real world. And then the credits are the story of his growing up before he gets his acceptance, you know, he gets his acceptance letter, he studies really hard. That's all character stuff in the credits. You know, you very rarely get a credit sequence that furthers the story in the same way that the little montage right before the end credits does the same thing. And it helps the movie, it helps give the movie a really good pace. There's no downtime here. You know, it's like we give you this nice, cool little emotional scene before the credits. Now the credits are giving you more information. Now we're off to school. You know, he's on that bus and here we go. And it's so good. What about some of the, I have a big philosophical question I want to get to in a little bit, but before we do that, what do you guys think about the side characters? Who are some of your favorites? I think like Hardscrabble, Harold Mirren's character, is one of the was just insanely great. It's just scary and visually interesting, and of course the Uzma Kappa guys all have their own special charm. What do you think?
Well, Dean Hardscrabble. I'm so glad that she wasn't a villain in the end. I like because you thought that maybe she was gonna be like a Waternoose type character that becomes evil. She's not bad. She just, is really hard-nosed. She's a hard-nosed dean. It's a college movie. But she's not evil, and I really liked that a lot. And, of course, Helen Mirren is phenomenal as the voice.
Yeah, I agree for sure. Love the fact that there wasn't a traditional villain, really. I mean, other than some of the Roar guys, at times being a little villain-like, but nothing too maniacal there. I really do like Squishy quite a bit. I think he's funny. I think Pete Sohn does a great job with the voice. Yeah. Some of the other characters I really liked, but not a lot of voices stood out for me as really memorable. Some of them I thought were a little kind of right on the nose, like an Aubrey Plaza. But not bad, just nothing that was real memorable outside Billy Crystal, who's phenomenal.
I really liked Art. I think Charlie Day is just such a funny character, and that's a character that I feel like we might see like a toy, not a Toy Story tune, but like a Pixar short about, just because he has this weird like CD pass, like I can't go back to jail, and all these little asides that I'm just like, what is going on with this guy? Well, and the same thing with Joel Murray's character Don. You know, like I would love to see him in his office job. You know.
Yeah,
just they build these backstories, and that was one of the things I liked about them all was, save for maybe the two-headed guy with the, you know, that I whatever their name is,
the Dave Foley, yeah, and Sean Hayes character, yeah,
right. It was funny, but the other ones really have a story and are really full characters. They have a little bit of a backstory. They have a very distinct personality. Yeah. You know, there's just classic, really good Pixar supporting characters.
Right. Well, and the cast list in this film is really, really fun. And, you know, Steve Buscemi plays Randall, of course, or Randy, as he goes by in this movie. Really, Alfred Molina is a professor in it. But you mentioned Joel Murray, who I don't know if, you know, a lot of audiences generally know who Joel Murray isn't huge, but Bill Murray's brother. But he was in last year that movie, God Bless America? Was that like, it was a couple years ago?
It was like last year, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and he's also been in Mad Men, so he's around, and I actually didn't realize when I was watching the film that he plays Don, but Don is a great character, and I love what happens to Don in the end. I just think that's really funny, and to see Squishy's response to that is really funny too.
Yeah, that was a little PG-13 almost.
Well, yeah, and it's just so awkward, and I just love that they went there. But I think, you know, Art, I think, is my favorite of side character. Going into it, having seen the first few minutes at Pixar, I thought that Squishy would probably be my favorite side character. But then when you actually see the film, Art just has so many great lines, and he's so surprising. And visually, he's so funny to look at. Like, I really need to pick up an Art toy because he's just such a funny, like, the Disney store has these funny, like, he's essentially just like a sock, you know, but just bent over. But he's great. And I almost, like, don't like it whenever because I've seen more of the trailers and stuff now that I tried to avoid before I saw it. And I almost don't like it when I see lines that are kind of just funny throwaway lines in trailers, because I feel like you see them so much that it kind of makes the value of the lines go down a little bit. And so I feel like some of his lines maybe have potential to do that. But in the film, I just think he always has such funny things to say, and I really liked watching him a lot.
And speaking of the trailer, I mean, well, the teaser trailer isn't even in the movie. It's the whole disco ball thing. That was I don't know if that was cut from the movie or if that was just created as a trailer. But that, I mean, that's great. I remember walking out of that movie and thinking, "Oh, cool! That was, you know, 90 seconds that I enjoyed, but wasn't in the movie." Because, you know, the more I can be surprised, the better.
No, yeah, and I think Pixar's done this a lot. I mean, Monsters, Inc. had a trailer like that just had the characters, and Finding Nemo had one. A lot of them have had trailers like that, and it is fun. It's just like a fun little additional bonus that you can get that makes you excited for the movie but doesn't spoil anything about the movie.
Yeah.
Guys, I'd love to talk about, just for a minute, the I love the inventive ways that the different monsters go about scaring, especially during the simulation. They all have their own unique style, their own unique way of scaring. I love the callback with Wazowski kind of using the techniques that he saw at Monsters, Inc. when he was a little kid from his favorite scarer. I just really love the way they did that. And you look at this movie and you look at the animation, which is amazing, and you don't have any of those typical Pixarian rock stars who worked on this film. It's a lot of names that you don't recognize. A lot of those guys have moved on to director roles, or they've left the studio and are working on movies somewhere else. But there's a great group of animators that worked on this film, and they did an amazing job. And it's great to see more talent continuing to brew at the studio. And so you got Scott Clark, who was a supervising animator, but just some of the other names are just not as well known. And I thought they knocked it out of the park with the animation.
It's jumping off your first point. I completely agree. I mean, because they don't really get into it in Monsters, Inc., where it's like, and this actually dovetails into what I want to bring up too, the fact that the scaring isn't art, really. You know what I mean? Not art the character, but it's it is an art. It's not just, you know, Sully thinks you can just be scary. No, you have to know the person you're scaring and be well versed in all these different types of ways. Right. The way that Squishy scares people just by standing there is so great, and just beautiful, and it just adds for so much variety because, you know, on paper, if you're like, oh, here's a movie about a bunch of monsters that scare kids, you're like, oh, it's just going to be them screaming for 90 minutes. It's like, no, they have to set a mood. They have to, you know, use props. So many use their unique abilities. You know, the fact that Art can go under the bed, or that Don can, you know, go on the ceiling. Just so many great things. I mean, yeah, and the animation with it is all good. But yeah, that just, it adds such a great flavor. It's just one of those like inventive, smart details that you don't get in a lot of other movies.
Totally, totally. So, Jermaine, let's get into this philosophy of this.
Well, this is the thing is, so we're talking about scaring, right? And the whole point of Monsters, Inc., Monsters University, is scaring is the best. Scaring is the best. Everything about – I think Hardscrabble says the only thing, the real true mark of a monster is how scary you are.
Yeah.
Then I rewatched Monsters Incorporated, which I hadn't seen in several years, which, spoilers if you read it, ends with the fact that laughing is more important than scaring, is more powerful. So I was watching this film on the second viewing, which is I watched Monsters, Inc. between the two viewings. And I was like, all right, I love this movie, but I feel like it almost – knowing what happens later, knowing that scaring is not as important, almost undercuts it in a way because it takes everything that the entire university, the entire world is based on, scaring, and completely makes it superfluous. So I was like, now it doesn't – on the so that's the one side. The other side is right. – By making laughing more important than scaring, Mike ends up actually achieving his dream in that he's the one that goes in to the rooms. So it's a double-edged sword where I feel like Pixar, you know, does a really different thing. I'm not sure if they really realize that, or like if in a Monsters, Inc. sequel, Monsters University would be the stupidest movie ever because it's completely pointless. I don't know. It was just – these are a couple of my thoughts here that I was
writing. Jermaine, I'm so glad you brought that up. I actually had in my notes to talk about – because in my written review, I had written like some things happen in this movie that make Monsters, Inc. a deeper movie, like actually make Monsters, Inc. a better movie. And I think that this is one of those things that when you realize how much Mike wanted – to be, you know, the best and to be a scarer and to do that to really, you know, be successful. Just, I love the fact that he is the one at the end of Monsters, Inc. It makes that ending to me, it's like the end of Monsters University is the end of Monsters, Inc. in a way. Like that when you see Mike in that scene, it's no longer just a funny scene. It's now like, wow, he's finally getting everything he wanted. But I hadn't thought about it in the way that you said, does that make scaring superfluous? And here's my response to that, because this is a response. I think that if you go to any university or any college class and like talk to the professor about the field that they teach, you like to them, there is nothing that is more important than that field. And so to someone like Dean Hardscrabble, like scaring is the mark of a monster. But I don't think that necessarily that is an opinion that's shared by all monsters. Like maybe someone like Don, you know, he's in sales. Like, so to me, that'd be my response to that. That like, yeah, the professors in that university or that program, like where scaring is the top program, they're going to have a kind of a skewed vision of reality. I kind of look at the monster world as kind of like the human world, where it's like there's not any one thing that you're supposed to do. That everyone brings their variety and everyone brings their characteristics to make it better. So that would be my response to that. But I think it's a great question.
Well, because, Greg, before you jump in on this, just jumping off of that is I agree that the colleges might not catch up, right? Because I remember studying C++ at NYU, you know what I mean? And it's like that doesn't do anything anymore. But it wasn't even so much that the university would be behind at times. It's the entire world of being a monster. You know, it's like they're going to have to create a school of stand-up comedy at this place now, you know. And the cool kids aren't going to be the scares because that doesn't make as much power as the laughers does. And it's a complete flip on the entire world.
Well, no, hey, I can imagine that they're going to experience now what – this could be the Monsters, the third one. You know, like – speculating on what's going to happen if we ever, you know, as a society, get off like oil and go into some renewable energy or something like that. Like, it's going to be the infrastructure that we live in is for oil and for all that. So it's going to be, you know, almost impossible to switch to something else. That's probably the types of problems, like economic problems, that they're going to be facing. Like, maybe in the end of Monsters, Inc., they discovered a technology. Maybe Monsters, Inc. goes bankrupt because maybe they do their laughing thing for a while and it is more powerful, but no one, you know, there's powerful lobbyists. Yeah, so that would be an interesting thing to see.
Yeah, there you go.
Greg, what
don't
do you
forget,
think?
Don't forget, guys, there is a laugh floor. It's at Disney World now. They got that stand-up Monsters U attraction. So
right, and that's supposed to be pretty good.
I haven't been through that, but it's an interesting point, and it's something that I think gets lost unless you're totally geeks like we are.
That's the point. This is our space, though. That's why we have this space to talk about things like that.
I'm glad I could bring it up here, because I bring it up anywhere else and people are like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, yeah, no. the Pixar podcast fans will think about it and like scratch their heads.
This is what we think about. Absolutely. Well, so along those lines, the other thing that I think really makes Monsters, Inc. better that happens in this movie, another just example like that where it makes it deeper, is something as simple as the opening scene in the beginning of Monsters, Inc., when Mike is coaching Sully, and you know, it's setting you up to the characters, you're seeing the different personalities. It's just kind of a funny scene, but it doesn't really feel very consequential. Well, after I saw Monsters U and I watched the original Monsters, Inc. again, suddenly that scene was like really emotional for me. I was like, wow, like this is where it started. Like they used to be, you know, competitors, and again, when Mike is coaching him in Monsters University too, like when you first see that, I love that connection to the other film. I just feel like it makes it deeper, and it's part of the same world and really enjoyable.
Oh, you're absolutely right. Like the end, Monsters U not only makes the ending of Monsters, Inc. better, it makes the beginning of it better. And it's nice to see how far Sully has come from his upbringing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And there's still a lot. I don't know if they'll come back to these characters. And if they do, it would probably be a long way away. I don't necessarily need to see what happens next to the characters, because it's such a great ending with the two things. But there is more. I mean, you can still learn more about Sully's father and like the Sullivan name. You know, that's something that they drop in this movie that we never heard about in Monsters, Inc.
Right.
I was curious about that. And so, yeah, I think they do influence each other and complement each other incredibly well.
Yeah. You know, I never would have expected that, you know, I never would have needed another Monsters movie. Like when they first announced that they were making this way back when, it was one of those kind of like with Cars 2 for me, like really, they're going to do that? I had a sort of paradigm shift after seeing this movie, and I realized something about, I think maybe this is just my personal taste, that I really enjoy sequels or prequels when they're done well, because they do expand on the themes of the film, and they, as you said, Jermaine, they can be original. Like it's we always say like, oh no, we want more original movies, but Monsters University is incredibly original, and I think that sometimes does get lost. I don't know if that's just a personal preference thing, but I think I can actually prefer sequels and prequels if they're done well. I think the problem is that usually prequels or sequels are just done because, you know, studios know that it's safer, or, you know, not as ambitious or something. But I think, you know, this movie is as ambitious as any original, you know, film. It doesn't at all feel to me like just a cash cow or something.
Yeah, I don't necessarily think this is a safe bet here. You know, it's like Monsters Incorporated came out, what, over 10 years ago? You know, so it's not like, you know, a Star Wars movie where they're sort of all encompassing all across the world, or a Marvel movie where we get one every year. This is a prequel to a movie that came out over a decade ago that, yes, was a big hit, and yes, has an audience who's watched it growing up and watched it on DVD. But I don't think it's a guarantee, you know, and I think the only way they could make it successful is to make it so original and so complimentary and so standalone. I mean, you don't need to have seen Monsters, Inc. to get into this movie. Of course, it enhances it, but I think it's a totally standalone experience.
Yep. Cool. Well, I think those are some of my main thoughts. Greg Mariotti, what any other things you want to talk about with this film?
I guess I'd love to dive in a little bit to anything you felt like was missing or you wanted more of or any qualms you had with the film. I just wondered if you guys had any little nagging issues.
You know, I'll throw one out. I'm not sure. I would say this is a nagging issue because it's sort of nagging at me, but I don't know that it's a problem I necessarily have with the film. But when I see it again, I'm excited to see this film, or see this particular scene and kind of see what I think of it. It's the scene when they're on the lake and Sully, you know, admits that he is terrified all the time and that it sort of he admits his weakness. I'm not sure if that scene completely works. I don't know if there's something about it that's a little bit too it feels exactly like what he would say. So I'm curious to know how that scene felt to you guys, if that seemed, because you know, overall that part of the movie felt really satisfying to me, but just something about that particular scene, I wasn't quite sure if I believed it. What did you guys think?
I felt that moment genuine and gorgeous. By the way, it looks like literal painting. But no, that moment felt genuine to me, especially because they build it up earlier in the film. Like we didn't mention, there's the scene where Uzma Kappa goes to Monsters Incorporated. And they get to see all the crazy different scares, and they talk. And then the moment where Mike and Sully talk about the baseball cards or the scaring cards, and it's the first moment of real connection. It's sort of that's the beginning of their true friendship, where they've already before this they've just sort of, you know, been okay. And then you know we end that with this montage of them getting up in the morning. I feel like it does that last scene does get there. Cool. But to bounce off both of those in Greg's question. The scene I just mentioned, as much as I love the scene with the baseball cards, it almost feels like the movie, it was like, okay, well, here's where they have to start being friends. Right. You know, so it was almost, it doesn't feel exactly forced, but it's like, okay, we're going to be sort of enemies, sort of just deal with each other, and this is the scene, and now we have this one little moment. It didn't feel exactly organic like the rest of the movie does. It's almost like it needed its booster shot. And I still feel... the scare games as a whole are pretty predictable, like until you get to the end. Like, you know, Uzma Kappa has to make the end, you know. I mean, they try their best. They you know, Uzma Kappa loses the first game, they win the second game, like in a pretty spectacular fashion. But it's still just a move. It's just like, you know, five little games. It's Revenge of the Nerds all over again, which, you know, is both fun, but a little bit, you know, shrug inducing. Again, but minor gripe.
Sure. Well, how about you, Greg?
Well, I love, from a funny standpoint, I thought the first scare game was pretty damn funny. It just, you know, I can't remember what they call those little prickly, porcupine-y, urchin-type things that they throw all over the ground, but very funny stuff, I thought. But I'll say this, there were definitely some funny moments in this film. I don't think it was as funny as the first Monsters, Inc., but it was funny. And Jermaine mentioned the emotional core and some people complaining online about the movie not having an emotional core. I disagree with that as well. I think there's definitely a core here with Sully and Mike and with Mike's, you know, story. I don't think it's as powerful as the Sully and Boo story, but because that kills me every time I see that. But it's definitely well done. And then I kind of was hoping for a few more cameos. I mean, there's definitely a few good ones.
That's right.
But I was kind of hoping for a few more. We get a couple there at the very, very end, but I kind of expected to see Celia at some point, maybe in college, and maybe a few others. I did notice George Sanderson, I think, at one point in the background.
No, he has a card at the end, Sanderson, during the credits.
Sure. Did I felt like I saw him actually on campus in the background, but maybe I was looking at another monster that kind of looked like him. I don't know. Did you see him, Derek?
I remember. Yeah, it's sort of fuzzy now, but I do. I seem to recall that he has like a little moment in the movie when you like notice him somewhere. Maybe it's at the end. Yeah.
I don't remember that. I also was another little nitpick here was, so, you know, like we said, the roar guys are the bad guys, but they're also really good at what they do. And they're not particularly mean. I mean, a little bit mean to Mike and the guys when they pull the pranks and stuff, but they're all also really good at what they do. And at the end, almost if you watch the cards that we see at the end during the end credits, it almost everybody in the movie gets a job at Monsters, Inc. and then also, but then a couple of the Roar guys get a job at like Fear, Inc. or something like that. It seems like a rival company. And to me, that just felt like, really, we're going to, just because they're bad guys, not give them a job? Like, it's weird. Like, I don't know. There was something off-putting about those cards, seeing that everybody got jobs out of college. Though, to be fair, Mike and Sully don't graduate college.
No, they don't. Yeah.
So the fact that everybody graduates college, gets jobs, and they don't right away, I guess sort of works. But that was something I remember being shucks about.
Yeah. Well, to the Celia point, Greg, I actually was kind of happy. I love her as a character, but I was sort of happy that they didn't have her, because to me, if they had had all if they had made a point to have all these cameos, it would have felt more forced to me. It would have felt like it's sort of more believable that maybe they didn't meet in college. Maybe Mike met Celia at work, sometime later or another time. So I kind of liked that. It felt sort of true. And to me, the cameos that were there, definitely in the theater that I saw it, definitely got huge laughs. Like when the snowman comes up, that's, or Yeti, whatever, whenever he comes, that's a really, really funny scene. I think it's delivered really well. And same thing with Roz.
Though yeah. The Roz thing does spoil Monsters, Inc. a little bit, right?
True.
That's true. Yeah, for sure.
Good point.
I think I saw the film last Sunday at the Seattle International Film Festival, and there, no question, the Roz cameo got the biggest response in the screening that I saw. But you're right; it does spoil Monsters, Inc. a little bit.
Right. So what order are you supposed to watch these movies in? That's whenever you have a prequel, that always ruins everything for that reason.
I think you have to watch Incorporated first.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so too. I agree. You mentioned sequels and prequels a little bit. I mean, unless I'm missing something, other than parts of The Godfather 2, can you guys think of really good prequels?
Well, I was talking about this recently, Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, I agree.
Sure. And that's a little more of like a reboot too. Like that's not as, I don't know. That's not as like faithful to the original Planet of the Apes as this one is.
No, that's true. No, other than that, no, there aren't many. I mean,
that's a good question. I can't think of any.
No, the one, like I said, the one, because I think Peter from Slash Film was with you guys at Pixar, and I think they said in one of the groups that question came up, he said that the Brain Trust was like, well, what are good prequels? And they couldn't come up with one. And and then we said, well, what about Rise of the Apes? And then we realized that they probably had this conversation way before Rise of the Apes actually happened.
Right.
Because Pixar probably currently developing Monsters Incorporated 4 at this point, but everybody won't find out about it for like 25 years, which is how they work. But yeah, I do think without a doubt, Monsters University now is right at the top of that list.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Well, no, that's really kind of interesting that you can't really think of any others. And I think there are a lot of problems, like something that you mentioned, Jermaine, about that scene when you know they're going to become friends eventually, and so that scene might be a little bit contrived or whatever. I think that is like in essence the problem of prequels. It's like, how do you have a suspenseful or an interesting arc where that what's going to happen in the end? And so I think that really is the challenge of the prequel. And so in that light, that sort of makes me a little softer on that. On that moment, knowing how difficult that must be. But so I'm trying, what makes this work then? Why is it that this one works when, no other prequel we can come up with?
I think it's the twist.
Yeah, it does keep you guessing. They found ways to be surprising. That must have been a thing that they really tried to do. Like, how can we make this genuinely surprising? That was probably a big question.
And it also, it doesn't focus on the same character, where, like you said, Monsters, Inc. focuses on Sully way more than Mike. Here, right. We focus on Mike, so we get Mike's arc. So we basically have, a movie per character. Plus, yeah. Like I said, I feel like it's almost emotionally bigger than the first. Well, Greg, I know you said the Boo storyline to you is more impactful, but for me, I was way more emotionally invested in, like, an attention level. I was way more tense and worried about the characters in this film than Monsters Incorporated. Just that scene outside and stuff was just very, very suspenseful. And just looking, I just cheated and searched like a list of prequels.
Yeah.
The ones that are prequels that like are on this list are real sort of shady. Like technically Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom is a prequel, even though it came out last. Like,
oh,
you can't really, you can't, Oz the Great and the Powerful. Batman or Begins is a
James Bond. Yeah.
Yeah. James Bond. There's a couple, right? I guess Casino Royale. Yeah. That's on here. X-Men First Class. But these are all, I don't know, like they're all sort of reboots slash prequels. I feel like it has to be just a prequel. Like Batman Begins is a great movie, but it's a reboot. I mean, it's not a prequel to the 89 Batman in any way.
Exactly. Yeah, I would agree with that. That's interesting. Yeah, I think that the thing that makes a good sequel or a good prequel is that it's an original story. Like, I think the problem with a lot of sequels and prequels is that it feels like a rehash. Like, oh, now this is going to happen, and then that's going to happen, and they're going to make us feel this that we'd felt in the other movie. And I actually think that, you know, I love Toy Story 3, but I feel, as I've mentioned on the podcast, that emotionally sort of similar things happen in Toy Story 3 that happen in Toy Story 2, when you get the idea of the abandoned toy and the disgruntled toy and these things. So sort of like our story points that are repeated. And in Toy Story 3, I think it works well, but I think that that can be really tiring in a lot of sequels. And that's the thing with this movie. There really aren't any story points from Monsters, Inc. that are... It's not a rehash of any story points from the first film. It's just, you know, we know these characters already. Let's explore their lives in a different way. I think that's why it works, because it's not interested in just doing the same story, but... Let's, you know, we love these characters already. What else is going on with these characters? What else can we learn about them?
And it also enhances, like, we get, like, the fact that there are classes on making doors and, you know, and the canisters. Like, those are funny bits, but also enhance it. Though, I just realized this. If you hadn't seen Monsters Incorporated, there's no explanation of how this all works, really. You know what I mean? In this movie, like the fact that they have to sneak into doors and then get the energy. I guess you get it a little bit in the first scene with Krasinski and stuff, but
yeah, it's not as explained as in Monsters, Inc., which is good. I think that's how a sequel should be. I just lost my train of thought. Yeah, that's good stuff. What do you think, Greg?
Funny story I wanted to tell you guys, especially Derek, you'll appreciate this after our trip to Pixar.
Yeah.
So I took my son, he's 16. So I took him to the movie with me, and before the movie started, he turned and he goes, "Don't they meet in college, right, for the first time?" And I'm like, "Yeah." He goes, "But in the first movie, I thought they'd been friends since fourth grade." And I just think it's funny that he kind of pointed that out, and Pixar, they made a point of mentioning that you know, that is mentioned in Monsters, Inc., and they tried to figure out ways to make it work, and they just couldn't, and they just figured, you know what, we'll just have a meet in college. But the fact that my son pointed it out, I'm sure there's other people that are going to be pointing it out as well.
Yeah. Wow, yeah, I've seen stuff online about it, but that's really funny that your son organically – to me it seemed like a nitpick that people like us online are usually the ones to point those out. It surprises me that somebody would just remember that. But yeah, go ahead, Jermaine.
I was just going to say, it's kind of like a thing that you might just say to a buddy. Man, yeah. I've known you since like the fourth grade. You know, it just seems like an aside. I think that was sort of my thing. But again, that, you know, but if you take the stuff literally, then yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of a fudge. But what are you going to do? I mean, nothing. They didn't know they were going to make this movie then. And I wouldn't want to watch Little Mike getting beat up by Little Sully for 2 hours.
Right.
You know, which is what would have happened.
Absolutely.
Age. Yeah.
And Little Mike is so cute. I don't want to see that. Yeah.
No. I mean, he definitely got beat up. Little Mike got beat up. I mean, we'll just
all the time.
Yes.
Yeah. okay. So I remembered the thing that I was going to say is that the reason maybe that this just comes to mind, maybe the reason there aren't good prequels is because it really would have to be animated to be a prequel, because, you know, they can go in and they can redesign the way the characters look. In a live action film, it'd be a big, you know, makeup thing. People in real life get older, and so it'd be really hard to go back and do a prequel unless it's a story like James Bond or Indiana Jones or whatever, when they're just timeless. You know, the age of the character isn't part of it. In most stories, it'd be hard to go back unless it's animated. So maybe that's one reason why there aren't a lot of good prequels.
Yeah, or recast, which is, you know, can work, like in Greg said, Godfather 2, or not work in other cases.
Yeah.
Or this is for Jermaine. Or you could do like a Portia de Rossi and like get some plastic surgery that doesn't work so well and try to look younger. That's
exactly.
Arrested Development. Out, burn, ouch. Oh, I was just gonna mention Arrested Development is a good prequel. I loved
Seth Rogen and
Seth Rogen. Yeah, they're great in that role. Another good prequel. So,
let me ask you guys one more thing, and then I'll shut up. I just curious. I think this is going to be huge at the box office, but I guess I wanted your box office predictions on how well you think this movie is going to do in the U.S. and then worldwide.
Yeah, well, so I'm interested to hear what Jermaine thinks about this. I feel like he's good at that kind of thing. And actually, Jermaine, I heard you on the Slash Film podcast talking about your box office predictions, and so you had this film up there. So, yeah. But just coming to New York City, I just got here a couple weeks ago, and there is literally a Monsters University like advertisement on a taxi everywhere. Like, it's on every taxi practically. So that actually surprised me how much advertising. I mean, every movie gets a lot of promotion here in New York, but it's definitely being. No one is gonna be unaware that this movie is happening, so that will probably contribute to it. What's its big competitor this summer? I mean, Epic already was released, and I guess we've got, when does Despicable Me 2 comes out? That's kind of its main thing, right?
It's a couple weeks after. I mean, Man of Steel will be out for a week at that point,
right?
And people still want to see that, I think.
Yeah, and I think there is some overlap of audience, you know, that will want to see both those movies for sure.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, I think the movie's going to do very, very well. I think it's going to be. The thing that's crazy about this summer is that Iron Man 3 started with such a big opening, with like 175 million. It's like already the number 5 movie of all time internationally. I don't know if even Man of Steel can beat that this summer. It's just, it had this huge jump on the gate. Oh, excuse me. But I feel like Monsters U is going to be right up there in the top 3. I feel like you're looking at maybe 275 million domestic, you know, with maybe like 600-700 everywhere else, giving it, you know, maybe around, well, I would say probably more like 700 total, so like 500 everywhere else. That would be like my guess. I think it's going to be a big hit, and I think it encourages repeat viewings from kids. Like you said, there's not a ton of competition. I think Despicable Me 2, when it comes out, you know, we'll definitely get some of that. But it has a few weeks, so I think it's going to be a big hit.
Yeah. How did Brave do again? I don't always keep track of box office stuff.
I think Brave was a disappointment. It made
really?
It made 237 domestically. It made you know, a little bit more worldwide. When you add the worldwide, it's up to 538. I really think that this movie is going to play like Toy Story 3. You've got those kids that saw Monsters, Inc. that are now in college, the 10, 12, 13-year-olds. You've got us, the little bit older generation that loved the first film as well. I kind of think that this movie is going to make – I think it's going to make 350-plus in the U.S., and I think it's going to make 600-700. I think it's going to make $1 billion. I think it's going to maybe not be as strong as Toy Story 3, but really close. And if you look at Pixar's domestic people forget this. Up is the third highest domestic grossing Pixar film. It's at 293, and then it goes Nemo and Toy Story 3. I really think it's going to be right there between Nemo and Toy Story 3. And then worldwide, you've got Toy Story at a little over $1 billion, Toy Story 3, and then Nemo's next at 880. I could really see this film going right up there, right underneath Toy Story 3, being the second biggest Pixar film ever.
Now, actually, that's a pretty bold statement, especially, and I know this is one of those things, I spoke a little bit out of turn. It comes out on the 21st, which is today, and then it opens on the 28th, there's no real competition, there's like White House Down, that's a whole different audience, but on July 3rd, there's Despicable Me 2 and The Lone Ranger, another Disney movie. So those are both directly in the wheelhouse of the Monsters Incorporated. I think after that, there's like nothing until Turbo, but I haven't heard anything good or anybody really caring about the Fox animation film Turbo. But I think Greg, it can reach those numbers if it stays in that top five for like a month and a half or two. But that it's going to be tough because this summer is super stacked, and Disney having a second movie 2 weeks later is pretty rough.
Yeah, but yeah. You know, I think to Greg's point, you know, these are characters people already know, and I think that definitely will help a lot.
I do think it will. It will be tough to hit a billion. I think it's got a shot, and I do think looking back now, I mean, hindsight's 20/20, but I almost wonder why they didn't release this movie 2 or 3 weeks ago, because Epic really hasn't done squat, and I think it would have squashed Epic. And I know Disney really – they time this in America to when school gets out. They tend to do that every year with a Pixar film. You know, that third week of June when school's out typically is when they release these movies. But I think it would have done super well if they would have released it a couple of weeks ago. But I remember I sat down there at Pixar and I looked Lee Unkrich in the eye and I said, Toy Story 3 is going to make $1 billion. And he just looked at me like, there's no way. And I don't know if I'm going to be lucky enough to go 2 for 2. But I have a feeling this movie's going to do really, really well.
I think so, too. But I do think if they had released it, I think Epic's problem was that they released it against two movies that the core audience of 15 to 30 or, you know, 21 to 35 were dying for, Hangover and Fast and the Furious. And sure. that was a rough, rough weekend. Maybe, you know, if they had put it like this week, well, not Man of Steel, whatever, last week would have been a good one. But you're right. Yeah. The school thing is really smart. I know if I was still in school, I would have run out to see it right after, you know, we got out of class.
Totally.
Does anybody know if, what the international schedule is for this movie? Is it getting a worldwide release simultaneously, or is it being staggered? It looks like it's coming out in Australia. Actually, that's film festival stuff. Australia is June 20th, so that's actually the day before we get it. It looks like it's hitting most countries June 20th and 21st.
Oh, so that's all the same weekend. I mean, yeah, that's right. I mean, yeah, it looks like, yeah, and I'm looking at IMDb now, which is where I should have went in the first place. Yeah, it looks like everything opens sort of late June, and then it pops in a couple of the big markets like Japan, Hong Kong, you know, and a couple of
The UK in July 12th, so they have to wait a couple more weeks. And then our listeners in Lithuania have to wait until, like, late August, so.
Yikes.
Big ups to the Lithuanian listeners.
Yeah, definitely big ups. If there are Lithuanian listeners, please write in. I'd love to know that. Cool. Yeah. I think it's gonna do well.
Yeah. I think this the monsters and just the colors, and I think that might play better internationally too than something like Brave or Cars 2. Mm-hmm. I think this is gonna do really, really well, and I'm sure that it's gonna be their biggest hit since Toy Story 3. There's no question about that.
Yeah. Well, I think people will be revisiting Monsters University more than maybe Brave. I think people will want to go back to the theater to see it more than once. So that'll be. That'll be big, and it's going to attract a lot of different types of audiences. And overall, I think that, yeah, the three of us are just excited about this film. I'm glad to hear that we all really liked it. Let's just go to final thoughts. This has been a great review. Any other last comments you want to make about the film, Jermaine Lucier?
I'm happy to really be passionate about a Pixar film again. I like Cars 2, and I like Brave. But neither of them are what the quality we've come to expect. The WALL-E, the Up, the Incredibles, the Toy Story. And I feel like, you know, Pixar's hit it out of the park again. And it really raises the bar for The Good Dinosaur next year. I mean, that's an original concept. First time director, Bob Peterson. And it's got a lot
voice of Roz.
To know. Yes.
Yeah, Bob Peterson, voice of Roz. Yeah, absolutely. Cool. Well, how about Greg Mariotti? What are your final thoughts?
Totally agree with Jermaine. Can't wait to see it again, and got to look for those Good Dinosaur cameo in the second viewing. I didn't see anything the first time around, and I don't know. Ooh. Do you guys have you heard anything about a Good Dinosaur teaser before the actual film?
Great question. I looked up,
and they're doing the Frozen trailer next week, so I think that's going to be the attached trailer.
Oh man, I mean, I'm excited about that one too, actually, but that's disappointing. I really am excited to see. We don't know anything about this movie, Good Dinosaur.
Maybe we'll have to wait until D23, and hopefully I'll be down there for D23. You going, Jermaine?
I already have my hotel booked. I will be there.
Nice. Sweet. When is that? Is that this summer?
It's August.
Yeah. August, yeah. Okay.
Second weekend in August, D23. This is where we're going to get all the big Star Wars scoops.
Cool. Well, has a Pixar release ever had, you know, a Disney trailer and the next Pixar trailer? I'm wondering if that's ever happened. Like, I want to say,
well, they haven't done the whole, well, I guess with Cars, Cars and Brave was the last time they did it, but Brave didn't have a Monsters U, or did it?
No, I think it did. I think Brave had a that teaser, that first teaser for Monsters U. I'm pretty sure it did.
I don't remember.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think it had the disco ball.
The disco ball one. So we'll see. I hope that we. It's a mute point though, because I guess listeners will already know at this point, and we'll already know if it.
The
it
cat's out of the bag.
The cat's out of the bag. We're talking in the past now. We're so last week, guys. So last week. All right. Well, this has been really fun to talk to you guys. Thanks again for coming. My final thoughts on the movie. Loved it. Excited to see it bunch more times and load up the soundtrack on my iPod. And oh, I do quite enjoy that other song. I should look up the artist. It's like the dance beat song called Roar. Axwell and Sebastian Ingrosso. So love their song. They play it, I think, during the dance scene in Monsters University. But I've listened to that a couple times on my iPod as well. Anyway, love the film. Great to talk to you guys. As always, check out pixartalk.com to see more of Greg's stuff. And you can find Jermaine at slashfilm.com, yes?
That's perfect.
Yeah, and where can we follow you on Twitter, Jermaine?
I don't have a real simple one like you guys. It's at Jermaine Lucier. That's GERMAINLUSSIER.
And it's listeners, it's worth the effort to type that in, because it's great to follow. Always have interesting comments on Twitter. Anything else either of you want to plug before we say goodbye tonight?
No, go see Monsters University.
Cool. Well, great to talk to you guys. Thanks again for coming on the podcast.
Thanks, Jer.
Thanks, sir.
Thanks, Jermaine.
Okay, Squirt here will now give you a rundown on proper exiting technique.
Mom, it's just my ball.
Don't let it happen again.
Yes, well, I'll try to be less careless.
I'm watching you, Wazowski. Always watching.
It's got this kind of slowly melty. It's not really a smoky taste. It's a certain, it's kind of like a... Boom! Sap kind of taste. Don't you think? What would you call that flavor?
Lightning?
Don't look at the light!
I can't help it. It's so beautiful.
My name is Doug. I have just met you, and I love you.
Gone! It's all gone. All it's gone. Bye-bye. Who's here?
Thank you for listening to the Pixar Podcast.